Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to the next thrilling episode of Between the Tackles. I, as always, am your host with the most, Hogan, here to tell you how much I suck at picking football teams to win on Sunday and Monday and Thursday and whatever other freaking day of the week the NFL decides to play on. Unfortunately, my buddy, my pal, my co-host Burgess is unavailable again this week. We wish him the best. Not really. He went 3-0 in his pick, so screw him. I don't want to talk about him, but I got my other buddy here, my other host with the most, Manish. How the heck are you, bud?
I'm doing great. I'm coming off a 3-0 week myself, so I'm trying to ride this streak. Yeah, I'm on a heater, and anyone who gambles knows that when you're on a heater, you gotta double and triple down until you gonna get slapped in the face. And I would anticipate that that's coming soon because, like I said, I've been pretty good, not only in the bets on this show, but, you know, in bets I may or may not be making online as well.
Well, I don't really want to talk to you a whole lot. You went 3-0. Burge went 3-0. I went, 1-2? I'm in the doghouse. I'm the clown. I'm in the basement. I'm going to compare myself to my New England Patriots, where they came out like a shooting star, just took everybody by storm. I went 3-0 in week one, and since then I've cratered, and you hit the nail on the head. Halfway through the year, I'm looking like a putz at this point. So I'm going to put on my dunce cap, and we're going to get this episode rolling around, and we're going to start talking some other stuff, because I don't want to talk about our football picks anymore until we have to talk about them at the end there. But let's get into the biggest news that broke very, very recently this week. Actually, I think it was yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, that two big trades ended up happening that influenced the AFC East of all divisions really the most. And obviously we'll start with the big one that everybody kind of anticipated, but we were waiting to see if it was going to drop. And I'm of course talking about the Davante Adams trade from the Raiders to the New York Jets. Manish, give me your thoughts, your initial thoughts on what happened with this trade.
Well, like you said, you saw the tea leaves. I mean, I think, it would have been, frankly, a surprise if Davante Adams were not dealt to the Jets. You could kind of see this coming for a week plus. So Tuesday was a busy day with Davante being traded to the Jets, and then shortly thereafter, Amari Cooper to the Bills. But as far as Davante Adams going to the Jets, I think I may have said this a week or so ago. For him, from just a football perspective, forget about winning, losing playoffs and all that, but just from a football perspective, it made the most sense for Davante Adams because he's got an incredible rapport on and off the field with Aaron Rodgers. He understands the offense. He knows, I think Aaron Rodgers said on Wednesday that he's got like 95% of the calls already. So he basically knows this offense. He's going to hit the ground running. They play on Sunday night in Pittsburgh. So it's not a typical scenario like you'll see, for example, with Amari Cooper and in Buffalo, where he's got to learn the quarterback. He's got to learn the offense. And it might take a couple games to kind of ramp up. That's not going to be the case with Davante Adams. He knows Aaron Rodgers' nuances and vice versa. He instantly becomes the number one option. And I know there's a lot of questions about, well, what does this mean for Garrett Wilson? Garrett Wilson, to me, becomes the second option. I think an exceptional second option, nevertheless. But if you don't think that Aaron Rodgers is going to look first and foremost at Davante Adams in virtually every high leverage situation in game from this point forward, then you haven't been paying attention to the NFL in the last decade, because these guys have done incredible things when they were younger, albeit, but they know each other. At least Davante Adams, I can tell you, is playing still at a very high level, maybe not at the all-pro level he was a few years ago, but still at a very high level. And Aaron Rodgers trusts him. And I think what you saw, Hogan, and this is something I really disagree with Aaron Rodgers on, but what you saw after the Monday night loss, when he threw an interception that was intended for Mike Williams, you saw clearly and heard clearly that Aaron Rodgers does not trust Mike Williams. I thought, frankly, it was Bush League for him to throw Mike Williams under the bus. That's something that you discuss in-house. Publicly, you say all the right things, but he didn't hold back. And I think people who followed the NFL since Aaron Rodgers has come into the league know that he doesn't suffer fools. So if you are not up to speed with what he thinks you should be up to speed with, he's not going to be happy. The Jets signed Mike Williams for $10 million in the offseason. That experiment lasted a grand total of 6 games. He's likely going to be out. He's not really a part of the future anymore because Davante Adams slips right in. So I think from a football perspective, Aaron Rodgers gets the guy he wants. All of that being said, that wasn't a need of theirs. Does Davante Adams make their passing game better, their offense better? Yeah, I think he makes them better. but they have bigger questions in terms of pass protection, in terms of run defense. Those are issues that they need to address that they haven't, because they want to make Aaron Rodgers as comfortable as possible. Whereas in the other trade, the Bills absolutely delivered on one of their biggest needs, which was wide receiver.
For sure. You brought up one thing that I think a lot of Jets fans have been talking about, where a good buddy of mine, Mike Cataldo, shout out to him. He loves the Jets more than anything. And the first thing he said when they grabbed Devontae was, great. Well, that doesn't stop the nosebleeds of us letting up a million yards on the ground, or, yep, you know, preventing Aaron Rodgers from getting sacked, or he's getting beaten up the last couple of weeks, especially in London, where he took that big hit where everybody held their breath going, oh boy, is he out for the season again? So agree that Devontae Adams certainly makes things interesting in the passing aspect of the New York Jets. Does it solve all their problems? Are they immediately going to go on a run and be Super Bowl champions? I find it very hard to believe until they clean up that defense, especially the reason why Saleh was let go was the defense wasn't performing and he was a defensive guy. So it's a big question mark across the board there. And we're going to touch on the other trade that you briefly brought up there too, was the Buffalo Bills one where they grabbed Amari Cooper from the Browns. Now, this is not the first time that Amari Cooper has been traded, because he obviously went from the Raiders to Dallas to Cleveland and now traded to Buffalo Bills. I don't think Amari Cooper is a bad guy or a bad player. He certainly, at one point, I would have put him in the top, you know, 10 at least for receivers in the league. Maybe not today, not right now, but what kind of message does this send that Amari Cooper is so readily traded across he reminds me a little bit of Brandon Cooks almost, where Brandon Cooks, it seemed like every other year was on a brand new team, and it's kind of crazy. But what does this mean, I guess, for Amari Cooper and the Buffalo Bills, where he is now finding a home up in northern New York with Josh Allen?
Well, I think it kind of jolts both sides. It jolts the player because he's going from a team that was really struggling offensively with a quarterback who is unbelievably maybe the worst starting quarterback in the NFL in Deshaun Watson. I can't believe I'm saying that. I mean, I've never been a Deshaun Watson fan, but I just certainly didn't think he was as bad as he's playing right now, to, you know, a top three quarterback in Josh Allen. So it certainly breathes life into Amari Cooper, who I think has a lot of juice left. I mean, it was an interesting comparison to Brandon Cooks' scenario. I think there were reasons why he was traded from Dallas to Cleveland, ironically, for a fifth-round pick. And then 2 years later, the Browns got a third-round pick for a guy who's 2 years older. So kudos to the Browns front office in that respect. You're getting the draft capital that they got. I think it's fair draft capital. The Bills clearly need him. He's going to electrify – not electrify necessarily, but he's going to significantly improve the pass game, because you just can't have an offense where your top two options are Dalton Kincaid and Khalil Shakir. Shakir, to me, is a very good second/third option. He can't be the alpha. He can't be the number one wide receiver, whereas Cooper clearly has proven that he can. And, I mean, you don't have to go back that far to know that Cooper's got a lot left, because when Joe Flacco was the quarterback last year in Cleveland, Amari Cooper was lighting it up, and he was very much a number one wide receiver. And only since Deshaun Watson has returned did Cooper's numbers kind of dip, and everybody in that offense, you know, frankly, has dipped statistically. So I think it's a great move for the Bills. For as well as they ran the ball against the Jets on Monday night, and they ran it right down their throats in the first drive, Ray Davis, who looks like a, you know, exceptional pick, they took him in the fourth round. That guy, to me, I mean, honestly, I know it's only one game, but he kind of looks better than James Cook does, their starter, who was out with a toe injury. So, look, I think Amari Cooper diversifies your offense. So you've got, you know, to utilize Josh Allen's arm more than you had in the first 6 weeks. I think they're the best team in the AFC East, clearly, through 6 weeks. It only helps their cause. And again, as I touched on a moment ago, this was an absolute need for the Bills. So they helped themselves much more than the Jets helped themselves by getting Devontae Adams, even though I think Devontae Adams at this point is still slightly a better player than Amari Cooper. But in terms of how it improves or helps each team, I think that Cooper's addition is significantly more important to Buffalo than Devontae Adams' addition is for the Jets.
For sure. And I think a big thing that a lot of Bills fans are sitting there going, well, it really sucked that we lost Stephon Diggs and we lost Gabe Davis in the offseason, where they didn't really do a whole lot to replace them except bringing guys like, I think it was Curtis Samuel and I forget the other guy's name from, I think, the Steelers there, but, or I'm sorry, from, was it not Hardman? It was a Kansas City guy that they brought in.
Yeah, Mecole Hardman. But then, I mean, they did draft Keon Coleman, who has a chance to be good, but he's still a rookie and he's still finding his way through the league.
Exactly. Do you think it would have made a little more sense for the Bills to possibly retain a guy that already had a connection with Josh Allen from last year? Or are you more intrigued by the Amari Cooper trade where they kind of have to learn the ropes at this point, but it's still early enough in the season that it might pan out to be okay for them?
Yeah, I think that the dynamics between Diggs and the organization was not necessarily about what kind of player he still is, because he's still a quality player. He's not the dominant player that he was 2 or 3 years ago. I think it stems more from maybe what Stephon Diggs believed his role should be, how many targets he should be getting, how involved he should be week in and week out. I don't think that's going to be an issue with Amari Cooper. So, yeah, look, hindsight's 20/20, and in a perfect world, it would have worked out with Stephon Diggs, so there would have been no learning curve, and there would have been no giving up of a trade asset. But that's not reality. And the reality is that it was definitely time for Diggs to part ways with Buffalo. He kind of, heard in his comments since the trade that it was the move to make. It was no longer a good marriage between the player and the organization. So yeah, if you're playing fantasy football and you're thinking, hey, it just made a lot more sense to keep Diggs, I totally agree with that sentiment. But the reality is that you're dealing with personalities and, players' opinions of themselves and what they think their role should be. And if that's an untenable situation, much like you saw with the Raiders and Davante Adams, that became a distraction in the owner's words. I think Davis came out this week and said he's glad to get rid of the distraction. I think in many ways you could say the same thing about Diggs and the Bills. And is it unfortunate? Absolutely. But it's a reality that the organization had to deal with. And that's why they ultimately parted ways with Diggs.
Well, I think the Raiders are going to be just fine because they got a brand new partial owner over there named Tom Brady, who apparently after he owned them with the tuck rule, he wanted to actually own the organization. I had to throw that joke in there. I got a couple of Raiders buddies and I already messaged them saying, hey, he owned you with the tuck rule and now he actually has to own your organization. A little ironic there for me. But
don't forget that Richard Seymour is also an owner now.
That's right. Yeah, not as big of a news story. And actually, I really like Richard Seymour because he was my first jersey I ever owned. And I always appreciated him for what he did for the Patriots. Did not like when he went to the Raiders, but Belichick got a first round pick for him. I'm not going to complain. I digress. But we're going to move from one old Patriots quarterback to one new Patriots quarterback. And Manish, I want you to tell me your thoughts on Drake May getting his first start in the NFL this past weekend. Now, did he impress you at all with what he was able to do passing the ball where the Patriots were so inept with Jacoby Brissett before? But at the same time, I look at him as he's got to cut the turnovers down because he was responsible for 3 of them. And as much optimism as there is in New England about the young kid, they lost the game 41 to 21. So they got blown out by a phenomenal Texans team. But is there hope in the air with Drake May at this point?
I think there's a lot. And I mean, you're right. The results speak for themselves. They lost by 3 touchdowns and the name of the game in sports is to win. I get it. This was his first start though. And I was particularly impressed that he didn't crumble after the first quarter interception. I was also impressed. I mean, you knew he was more athletic than Jacoby Brissett. It's nice to see that in action. He ran for 50 yards or somewhere in that neighborhood. I like the fact that based on comments from players after the game, it was obvious to me that his confidence, May's confidence, that is, it was contagious. So these guys are energized. And again, I don't want to take a shot at Jacoby Brissett, but players can clearly see what Drake May's ceiling is, and it's much higher than Jacoby Brissett. Now, you got to be patient, not only as a fan base, but as players and coaches on the team, because he's going to make mistakes. But his fearlessness, his ability, and willingness to push the ball downfield, you saw that on the long touchdown pass. That, to me, is promising. I thought there were plays where, one particular play, he escaped the pocket, hit the Hunter Henry on a long catch, which I think led to a touchdown later that drive. That, to me, was a reflection of his mobility and his athleticism. And that's kind of what, look, I'm not a Patriot fan, but as a football fan, that's kind of what I wanted to see. Are there a handful of plays where you're like, you know what? There's a reason why he was drafted so high. And there's a reason why there is hope that he can become a really quality player. And I think, I saw it in the first game. I saw mistakes, absolutely. I think you're naive if you thought that you weren't going to see mistakes. And I think, you know, that's from a player's perspective, coach's perspective, and fan's perspective. You know that he's going to make mistakes. But what did you like about that first start? To me, athleticism, ability to push the ball downfield, and overall confidence, which clearly permeated through that huddle, because players after the game, whether it's Kendrick Bourne, some of the other guys, I think the center even said, I mean, you can tell that this guy had command of the huddle, wasn't some, you know, scared rookie who was crawling into a hole after an early mistake. That matters at this stage of where the Patriots are. You know, it's a rebuilding year, so you got to hang your hat on this rookie. You know, is he tentative? Is he going to crumble when things get hard? Or is he going to try to forge through? And at least after the first game, every indication that we've gotten as football fans is that he's a guy who's going to try to forge through. And you saw flashes of why the Patriots were so high on him and why they took him in the draft so high.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the biggest thing that I noticed was at one point, I mean, if you were watching social media for the Patriots when that first quarter was happening, they got into a 14-0 hole and you would have thought the sky was falling and everybody was saying this is the worst team ever and blah, blah, blah. And then when he hit Kayshon Boutte for that 40-yard touchdown right before the half to cut the deficit from 14-0 to 14-7, we're sitting there going, it's a ball game. Which we haven't said in a while with Jacoby Brissett there. And again, like you said, no disrespect to Jacoby Brissett, but the Patriots passing attack was anemic at best. They could not do anything. He didn't pass for more than, I think it was 170 yards once in the five games he played. And Drake May, right off the bat, come out and almost hit 250. And the scary part that you brought up is obviously his rushing. He was the leading rusher on the team with 38 yards. That was with Ramondre Stevenson being out. I mean, that's a big thing that they really got to clean up going forward. As a Pats fan, to break this down a little bit, they need to establish the run when Stevenson's not available to give May a little bit of breathing room as well there, because where they got off to a 14-0 deficit and they had no run game to speak of, they immediately went to the air. And like you said, he showed flashes. The best word I like to use with May is the potential is there. And I'm really looking forward to seeing him hopefully progress throughout the season, because I've used the word regress with this team so much from week one to where we're at now, very much like my football picks week to week, as we know at this point. So that's right. I'm taking self digs at myself at this point. So let's move on. We've talked about the AFC East enough. We're going to move on to another thing that is a little less fortunate, and obviously one of the best defensive players in the NFL right now. Aiden Hutchinson went down with possibly one of the most gruesome leg injuries you could possibly have, where his leg snapped when he was in the middle of sacking Dak Prescott in that absolute blowout win over Dallas this past weekend. Manish, really quickly, before we get into the injury and the ramifications of that, what does this mean for Detroit's defense right now? Are they still Super Bowl contenders, or is this really going to hold them back going forward the rest of the season?
No, they're still Super Bowl contenders. And for my money, even without Aiden Hutchinson, they're the best team in the NFC. You can make a real case that they're the best team in the NFL because their offense is explosive. I mean, that's an understatement. They have so many different ways to beat you. But yeah, when you lose a guy who is arguably the best defensive player in the league, certainly a top, you know, two or three defensive player in the league, a guy who's got half your team sacks, you're going to take a hit defensively. Now it's just a matter of how Aaron Glenn, their defensive coordinator, schemes up pressure if they don't get, somebody new in from the outside. How do you scheme up edge pressure? But, yeah, they're definitely going to be challenged on the defensive end much more so than if you didn't have Aiden Hutchinson. You know, that's not breaking news. It's pretty obvious. But in terms of them still being a viable Super Bowl contender, I don't think that changes, because I think, again, offensively, they're a complete juggernaut.
For sure. And Jared Goff is having possibly one of his best seasons ever as a pro, which is phenomenal. I mean, they got to a point where they were putting offensive linemen out at wide receivers and letting the fatties have fun. Hey, you know what? Jerry Jones didn't like it. As a former fatty, well, current fatty, I loved it. I want to see more linemen at wide receivers. So more hook and ladders to linemen all day. I love it. I love it. I love it. So let me ask you a question then. The whole debacle, we're going back to the AFC East. I said we were leaving it, but we're going back to it now, where the whole debacle with Hassan Reddick with the New York Jets, he has still not played a down for those New York Jets. Does this open the door for Detroit to possibly swoop in and try and trade for Reddick, where the Jets made it available that if he wanted to seek a trade, he could seek a trade? Or is somebody else going to come out of nowhere and deal with the headache that has become Hassan Reddick?
Here's the thing. I think, you know, in an ideal world, absolutely the Lions would be, you know, calling the Jets and saying, hey, we want this edge rusher that doesn't want to play for you. However, the reality with Hassan Reddick, and I don't think this has changed, said he wants a long-term deal. He does not want to play on his existing contract and play out the year. Because if he wanted to do that, he would have stayed with the Eagles. Eagles would not have traded him in the first place to the Jets. And the Jets obviously thought that they could somehow get Hassan Reddick to play with, you know, his existing contract and maybe give him a little bit more money this year, but not giving him a long-term deal. They have found out the hard way that that's not the case. So yeah, would the Lions like Hassan Reddick in a vacuum? Of course they would, but are they willing to give Hassan Reddick the money that he believes he's worth in a multi-year deal? I don't think so. I guess time will tell. You know, it's been a very interesting week on the Hassan Reddick front because his agents did fire him after not coming to some kind of agreement with the Jets. And then Hassan Reddick hired Drew Rosenhaus, and you know, people in the know in around NFL circles knows that Drew Rosenhaus is a deal maker. I mean, you know, he gets good contracts for his players. Does he get the best contracts for his players? No, he doesn't. Does he get good contracts? Yes. Drew Rosenhaus' value over the years, and he's been an agent for, I don't know, 20, 30 years, whatever. He's been an agent for a very long time. He's a deal maker. You know, he cuts deals, good deals, preferably good deals for both sides. And I think teams know that he's a good deal. What I found interesting was that, you know, a couple months ago when all the Reddick stuff was coming to a head at the beginning of the season, the Jets released a statement saying that they would under no circumstances trade Hassan Reddick. But now that Hassan Reddick has found a new representation in Drew Rosenhaus, the Jets have given Drew Rosenhaus permission to kind of seek a trade and try to find a trade partner. So that's kind of where we're at on the Hassan Reddick front. The other wrinkle to this, and I find this to be fascinating, when the Eagles traded Hassan Reddick to the Jets, you know, clearly Howie Roseman had enough. I mean, he probably tried a million different ways to come to an agreement with Reddick. Reddick would not budge. And I mean, to give Howie Roseman credit, he probably suspected that there will be a similar fate for the Jets after he traded Reddick. So in the deal that the Jets made with the Eagles, Roseman put in there that if the Jets ultimately trade Hassan Reddick at some point this season, that if they traded him to an NFC team, then the conditional third round pick that the Jets gave the Eagles initially was going to be a second round pick based on sack production. But if the Jets couldn't come to some kind of agreement, and then if they were at their wits' end, which they are right now, and traded Hassan Reddick, if they traded him to an NFC team, an NFC team obviously is a competitor of the Eagles, then that conditional third round pick that the Jets would surrender automatically becomes a second round pick, regardless of what Reddick's production is. So in that respect, Howie Roseman safeguarded this deal and protected the Eagles, probably thinking, hey, you know what? There's a chance that the Jets won't come to any kind of agreement. They'll get fed up with him just like we were. And if they trade him to an NFC team, we're gonna benefit. So in so many respects, the Jets are cornered. They can't come to an agreement with this player. They really can't trade him to an NFC team unless they're willing to forfeit a second-round pick, which they don't want to do. So that kind of narrows your trade options down to just one conference. And how many teams are actually willing to trade for Hassan Reddick at this point? That you'd have to think they're a playoff contender and would be willing to give him this long-term deal. I just don't see a team out there. Maybe there is, but I don't see a team out there. So this basically paints him in a corner, and they're really in a precarious position on what to do with this guy. Meanwhile, Howie Roseman looks like a genius.
That's true. I mean, it's really unfortunate that it's gotten to this point, because you'd love to see a talent like Hassan Reddick on the field making plays and doing what he does best. But typical Jets, just bungling everything as always. I mean, it's funny that you brought back the whole the trade where if he goes back to an NFC team that they have to surrender a pick. And it almost reminds me of when Brett Favre actually got traded to the Jets. I think there was a clause in there that Green Bay put in there that if he got traded to Minnesota, whatever that pick was, I think became like a first round pick automatically. Yep. I remember sitting there going, oh, Jets, please trade for Favre and then trade him again and give up a first round pick. I would love nothing more than to see you clowns just bury yourselves with that. Instead, we got to see Favre in New York for a year, and then he went to Minnesota anyway, so it didn't freaking work out.
But. And he was great in Minnesota. He was good with the Jets. They were 8-3, and they had bicep tendon tear, and they missed the playoffs. The next year, he was rejuvenated and took the Vikings to the NFC Championship game, I think, where they lost, actually, on an overtime interception that Favre threw against the Saints. But, yeah, look, the Jets, this is what I'll say about the Jets. The owners' meetings are going on right now this week. And somebody asked Woody Johnson about the Devontae Adams trade, about demoting the offensive coordinator and promoting a different offensive coordinator. And this perfectly sums it up. This is, in a nutshell, there are three words that Woody Johnson uttered that really capsulizes what the Jets are all about. And those three words was, this is directly from Woody Johnson. He said, "Thinking is overrated." And I think that pretty much on a million different levels sums up the New York Jets. Thinking is overrated.
I love it. Hey, Jets, do less thinking, please. For my expense, I love it more than anything. Well, without further ado, Manish, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors, and we will be right back. Don't go anywhere. All right, we are back. We are here. It's myself, Hogan, with Manish. We are breaking down everything NFL this week, and so far we're having a blast. I'm having a blast because I'm trying to forget the fact that I went 1-2 in my football picks. Manish is loving life over here, picking. He went 3-0. He's on top of the world right now. He's king of the picks right now. I don't want to talk about it, but let's get on a subject right now, Manish, that you and I both discussed a little bit pre-recording, and we both got hot and bothered about it. And I can't wait to go in on this because I talked about this at length in a preseason episode, actually, that I think I did solo and Burgess wasn't unavailable, where I talked a little bit about ESPN and all the streaming networks and how they are just canoodling all the money in the world from NFL fans. And we discussed about how there's a Monday night matchup against, I think it's the Chargers versus the Cardinals, that is exclusively on ESPN Plus. Now, for me personally, this is driving me insane because for a normal average Joe American that's out there trying to enjoy NFL, all you needed before was to either have cable, watch your basic channel, CBS, Fox, you could watch a game, you could do what you need to do. If you need to go to the bar, you could go to the bar. We're at the point now, Manish, where if you want to watch every NFL game, do you know what you need to have for streaming-wise? You need to have Amazon Prime. You need to have ESPN Plus. You need to have Paramount Plus. You need to have Peacock. You need to have Netflix coming up soon. For God's sakes, you're going to be paying $1,000 in streaming just to watch every NFL game. And it used to be, hey, you got a cable box, you got DirecTV, you got Sunday Ticket, you can watch everything. Are we getting porked as NFL fans? What the hell's going on here? Am I losing my mind?
No, you're not losing your mind. It's the NFL being greedy. And specifically, it's the 32 NFL owners being greedy. I know a lot of people blame Roger Goodell. Roger Goodell works for the owners. So this is something that can be easily stopped if the owners weren't greedy, if they didn't want more money. And, the culprits are clear here. It's not like, well, who should we blame? I don't know who to blame. There's 32 men who you blame, and every owner, you know, whether it's Robert Kraft, Woody Johnson, Arthur Blank, whoever, every owner there is to blame because they want to make more money. It's really that simple. And the notion that they think that someone is going to buy ESPN Plus to watch this Monday night game. By the way, there's another option for free, the Ravens and the Bucks on ABC. That you don't have to fork over whatever it costs to get ESPN Plus. I think it's ridiculous. It was a slippery slope. A year ago when the playoff was it last year, the Chiefs Miami game I don't even know if that was Peacock or whatever it was, Amazon Prime. I think it's absurd. You really if you want to watch every game, you're gonna have to pay for it. And I'll just speak on my behalf. I'm gonna watch the game on ABC. I'm from Philadelphia. Even if the Eagles were on ESPN Plus on a Monday night game, I would not pay. No disrespect to ESPN Plus, but I'm not paying for a streaming service just to watch one NFL game. It's bad enough that the ticket prices are what they are, and concession stand prices for food are what they are. If you got a family of two or four, You got to pay through, you know, plus parking. You got to pay through, you know, through the roof for that. I just think it's absurd. They make so much money as it is to sit there and gouge your customer base. You're basically preying on their loyalty to your product, and you're saying that they care so much about the product, they're going to pay whatever. So we can try to, you know, push the envelope a little bit more each year. So that who knows what the NFL is going to look like 5-10 years from now. Maybe every game, any game will be through a streaming service. And what to that, what I would say is just don't pay for it. And I know, you know, it's easy for somebody to say, well, you know, you're not a Chargers or a Cardinals fan. What do you care? And that's a fair point. But as I said, if the Eagles were playing, I would not be paying for a streaming service. I just think, you know, it's greed, and it's something, you know, I can't say that more. There is no like layered response to this. It's a simple response, and it's a simple reason, and it's just that the owners want to make more money. So the people to be mad at are not anyone other than the 32 owners of these teams.
For sure. And I think the big thing too that this reminded me of was way back in 2007 when the Patriots were actually going for their undefeated season. The last game of the year was the New England Patriots playing the New York Giants. That was right around, I think it was only a year or two after the birth of NFL Network. And that was actually a NFL Network exclusive game. And when the Patriots, it was. So yeah, a little history lesson here for you. They were 15-0, and they were playing the Giants, and it was supposed to be, I remember distinctively, it was at the end of the season, and it was supposed to be NFL Network exclusive because they were just trying to introduce it and get people to watch NFL Network. And in my household, because it's NFL, I had NFL Network, so I was like, I don't give a shit. This is great. I'm going to watch this game. But for the rest of New England that didn't have NFL Network, it opened a whole can of worms. Congress got involved. It was a whole shenanigans were finally, yeah, it was crazy. I had to look it up because it was like a whole thing when I was doing research for something, and I remember looking it up. But they ended up having to do it where they multicast it on both NFL Network, and I believe it was either CBS or ABC was able to do it, because they were sitting there going, how can you handcuff the American people that want to see history go down, where if the Patriots go 16-0, it'd be the first time ever. And if they don't have NFL Network, which at that time, I think in the households, it was like 3% of the nation had an NFL Network, where they were like, no, we need to see this game. And that opened a whole can of worms with that situation. And I know things have obviously progressed to the point with streaming, with the popularity that it's gotten to. But I'm on board with you where it's really, really aggravating for me, especially as a fan of the NFL in general, where I typically, even if my team's not playing, I'll have the game on. Maybe I won't be as super invested in it as the Patriots or anything like that. But like, I like to have the game on in the background. And it's going to get to the point, like you said, Manish, where if I don't have these 13 freaking streaming services, I'm not going to be able to watch the games at this point. And honestly, it is what it is, because I'd rather watch ESPN Gamecast, where I just watched a little ticker go across the screen, where I'm not paying an arm and a leg to have a service that I'm never going to use except one time out of the year. So it's really unfortunate that the greed and the way the owners are treating the product at this point, where they just care about the money. They don't care about the fans as much anymore. They don't care that the experience is getting ruined. I really hope they figure things out where we don't have to boycott or anything crazy comes up like that. But let's move on from our tangent here about streaming and ESPN and the blah, blah, blah. Let's get on to the exciting stuff, the matchups that we want to see this weekend specifically. And I'm talking about the good ones. We're not going to bog ourselves down here with Bengals, Browns. I know you're excited about that because that's one of your picks. I know I'm throwing you under the bus. Between you and the Browns, and then Burgess taking another freaking Panthers game, there's a reason why you guys are going 3-0. I'm throwing you under the bus at this point. We're gonna talk about the big games this weekend, the can't miss, the potential maybe Super Bowl matchups or playoff matchups. We don't know at this point, but let's get into the first one here, Manish. This one really catches my eye, and I'm very, very excited to check this game out. I'm, of course, talking about the Houston Texans traveling up to Lambeau Field and taking on the Green Bay Packers. As of right now, the Green Bay Packers are favored by 2.5. Who do you like in this matchup, and why?
Wow, you know, I honestly don't know who I like. I mean, I I thought about this game when I looked at the schedule a couple days ago. I would have felt really confident picking the Texans if Nico Collins were healthy. That's not to say that one wide receiver is really going to make that big of a difference, but I would feel more confident in C.J. Stroud, who has looked, you know, you guys, the Steelers, the Patriot fans watched him last week. I mean, he was okay. He was solid. Not necessarily dynamic. I think Nico Collins helps out that offense immeasurably. But, you know, Joe Mixon runs the way that he did last week, then I think the Texans, you know, on the road, they're an underdog. If I were picking a side right now, I might change my mind in 48 hours, but I like the Packers. I mean, I really like the Packers. I really like how Jordan Love is coming back to form after the injury a few weeks back. If the game were in Houston, I probably would take the Texans. It's a fun matchup. It's honestly, like, if this were the Super Bowl, I would love that matchup. If it's Texans Packers, you know, in a couple months, I think that'd be a highly entertaining game. I expect a lot of points. I love both quarterbacks. I just think that because it's in Green Bay, I'll give the Packers a slight nod.
Okay, fair enough. Especially if it was wintertime, you know I'd be rolling with Green Bay with that frozen tundra up there. You don't want to mess with those guys and Josh Jacobs getting that ball running. But like you said, if Joe Mixon and C.J. Stroud got a thing going, they might be able to surprise some people. So the next game we're going to look at, obviously, is one of the last remaining undefeated teams in the NFL. And of course, I'm talking about the Minnesota Vikings. And they are hosting who you said was potentially a Super Bowl favorite, the Detroit Lions, who are 4-1. Right now, Vikings getting the slight edge at -2 in this game. Who do you like and why?
I love the Lions. You take it. You're telling me the Lions are going to be an underdog. Yeah, it's on the road, but it's in a dome, so it's not like the weather's going to be any kind of factor. And I think anyone who's followed Jared Goff's career since he came to Detroit knows that in domes, he's much, much better than he plays outside. So the Lions getting points against, albeit a Vikings team that's undefeated, yes, and coming off a bye, so you got that double advantage there, at least on paper. But, you know, I love Sam Darnold. I think everybody knows that I'm a big fan of Sam Darnold. But I just think the Lions can put up points against anyone. Minnesota's defense has been pretty stingy against the run. That'll be an interesting battle because the Lions' strength obviously is the run with Montgomery and Gibbs. But, I don't expect any kind of route by any stretch. I think it'll be a fourth quarter game. But if you're telling me that you can get points in a dome, to pick the Lions, yeah, I'll do that any day of the week, regardless of who the opponent is.
I love it. Well, we're going to go right from the one of the last remaining undefeated teams right to the other last undefeated team. And I'm going to take this one, Manish, and you're going to tell me why I'm either right or wrong at the end of my little spiel here. I'm, of course, talking about the Chiefs and the 49ers. Spoiler alert, this is one of my picks for this week. And I'm going to sit here and I'm going to tell you why the Kansas City Chiefs are going to go to San Francisco and they're going to win. And the reason is they're in San Francisco's head. They have the 49ers number. The last two Super Bowls, every time they play, it always comes down to the wire. Patrick Mahomes is not playing his best football this year. Travis Kelce is not playing his best football this year. It doesn't matter. When you have a coach named Andy Reid, as much as I despise him, he's turned it around and he's won three Super Bowls at this point, and you got guys named Mahomes and Travis Kelce. You can never count these guys out. Right now, the 49ers are 3-3. They've looked very spotty at best during the year, where they've let up big leads both to the Rams and the Cardinals. They had a pretty convincing win against Seattle the last time they played, but the fact is they're getting a point and a half in this game, hosting the Kansas City Chiefs, who are undefeated. And like I said, they still have those guys on the roster, and they're only getting better as it goes on. And I'm not going to bring up the refs. Don't worry, Manish. I'm not going to go there. We're not talking about the refs right now. But I do believe that the Chiefs are going to go to San Francisco, and they're going to shock some people. Maybe not themselves. Maybe the 49ers fans, who are so sick and tired of the Chiefs coming in there and blowing their doors off, either in Super Bowls or whatnot. But I think the Chiefs win this game, and they win this game easily. Am I right or am I wrong?
Well, I mean, I think I wouldn't push back so hard if you didn't say that last part about winning. I mean, winning, look, I mean, anytime the Chiefs get points, and much like I just said about the way Detroit's playing, if you're giving Mahomes and Andy Reid points, I mean, it's hard to say that you're wrong if you're going to take the Chiefs' side. I remember a few years ago, the Chiefs weren't playing particularly well. Maybe they had a good record, but they weren't playing particularly well. They went into San Francisco. I thought San Francisco was going to hammer him, And I believe Mahomes had like 3 touchdown passes. I don't remember exactly. It was a few years back. Here's what I'll say. I disagree. I will take the Niners side on this. It pains me to say that because there is no coach in the NFL better coming off a bye than Andy Reid. His record is ridiculous. It's something like 21-6, 21-7, something absurd. Coming off a bye, and trust me, living in Philadelphia, I know how good his teams were coming off a bye. That just extended when he went to the Kansas City. The same story. So I don't feel great about picking against the Chiefs, but you know, I'm not a big believer that Kareem Hunt, despite the fact that he looked okay, looked pretty good last week, I think he'll have some challenges against the Niners. So I think it'll be tough sledding on the ground. We already know about the shortcomings that receiver that Kansas City has. Frankly, I'm a little surprised that they didn't get Amari Cooper. They might have been in on it, but I'm surprised they didn't seal the deal and get him. I thought he would have been a terrific addition. And look, the 49ers are the best 3-3 team in the NFL. Like, yeah, they're 3-3. So, you know, Parcells said, you are what your record says you are. And yeah, they're 3-3. They're a 500 team. However, I think there's a revenge factor involved. I kind of believe that, to be honest with you. Probably the two best coaches in the NFL. I'm a little partial to Kyle Shanahan. I just think he's an offensive genius. Obviously, he's had some shortcomings in big moments, but if you asked me who you would take if you were starting a franchise to be your head coach, number one would be Andy Reid. Number two would be Kyle Shanahan. So it's going to be a great matchup. I think it's going to be a fun game, an entertaining game. I don't think you're crazy to pick either side, but I'll lay the 1.5 points. I just strongly disagree with that it'll be an easy win for the Chiefs or an easy win for the Niners.
I'm thinking it's going to be easy because San Francisco's defense has been struggling very, very mightily lately. And you take away Nick Bosa. They don't have much except for Fred Warner. And I mean, he can only cover one guy at a time. So sneak peek into what my thought process there. But without further ado, let's get into your thought process, Manish, where clearly I'm looking at the picks from last week. And boy, oh boy, did you smoke it across the board. We're looking right here. You went 3-0. I don't want to read these off, but I got to, because we got to remind our listeners who you went with last week for your week 6 picks. You took the Packers -5.5 versus the Cardinals. That paid dividends for you. Secondly, you took the Buccaneers -3.5 versus the Saints. That worked out for you. The Buccaneers blew the doors off the Saints, if anything. And then, of course, you took the Lions -3 versus the Cowboys. I'm pretty sure the Lions won by 30-plus in that game. That was not even freaking close. So right. You went 3-0. That moves your overall record to 8-4. You are king of the leaderboard. My man, tell me what your picks are this week and tell me why you like them.
All right, well, I'm not one to make excuses. However, I will say that before I give my picks, I was the last guy to pick among the three of us. So some of these games are not, well, actually, yeah, I would say 2 of the 3 games are not really high profile games, but you know, I'm left with the scraps. So
didn't you go 3-0 last time you picked last? I don't want to hear it, Manish. You went 3-0.
I want the built-in excuse in case I go 0-3, because I can definitely see myself going 0-3. This time I actually could see myself going 0-3. All right, nevertheless. Falcons, Seattle. Seattle's going to Atlanta. Weather's obviously not a factor. Falcons, they looked okay against the Panthers. You kind of have to discount that because they're the Panthers. Seattle, they're Jekyll and Hyde. You don't really know what team you're going to get. I like the Falcons, 3 points, giving a field goal. Don't feel great about that. I wish I was given 2.5, but I'm going to give them the 3 points. I'm going to take the home team, the Falcons, and cross my fingers. That's the only quasi-good game on paper. The other two games, it's the Colts hosting the Dolphins. I don't know who's going to watch that outside of Miami and Indianapolis, and I don't even think people in Miami are going to watch that. The Colts get back Anthony Richardson. I don't necessarily think that's a good thing for the offense. I think they're probably better off with Joe Flacco as their quarterback, but it looks like Anthony Richardson is going to play. We'll see if Jonathan Taylor is going to play. Probably not, which kind of hurts them, but I see nothing from Miami, even though they're coming off a bye week, so they have an extra week to prepare. Mike McDaniel, who I have a lot of respect for, can scheme up some stuff, but they just look lifeless without Tua at quarterback. So I'm not picking them. I'll give the field goal. I'm giving a field goal. I'll take the Colts. I think the Colts are a good team, much better, frankly, as I said a minute ago, with Flacco than Richardson, but it doesn't look like that's in the cards. Richardson at quarterback, given 3 points at home to a team in Miami that just kind of looks lost without their quarterback. So give me the Colts -3. And the last one, I mean, I'm sticking with the Bengals. The Bengals, you know, haven't looked particularly good, even though they beat the Giants in primetime last week. They're given 6. It's a big number. They're given 6 on the road at Cleveland. Cleveland can't seem to score more than, 18 points a game. Their offense obviously took a hit, losing Amari Cooper this week. The Bengals, I'm still believers in the Bengals. Their defense did look much better against the Giants. The defense has been the weakness of that team this year. You know, I'll ride with Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins all day, any day. So it's a big number, almost a touchdown, especially on the road. But I'm just not a believer in the Browns, and that's why I'm taking the Bengals, -6 in Cleveland.
I want to remind all of our listeners out there that Manish is on record of picking against the Browns, and now we're going to clown number 2, as I'm calling it, for Burgess taking the Panthers last week. What is he doing? He's taking the Panthers again this week. But before we get into that, I'm going to read off Burgess's picks from last week where he went 3-0. He took the Bengals -3.5 versus the Giants, which you just mentioned. Obviously, the Bengals covered there. His one upset that he took the Colts +2.5 versus the Titans. I don't know if that's really an upset. I'm on record as hating the Titans for Will Levis and his clown show that he puts on down there, where he's just every week. Did you see his little Spider-Man celebration he did when they were losing? Is there a bigger dope in the NFL right now than Will Levis? I don't know.
The celebration, though. I don't know. I kind of like the celebration.
I mean, I like it if they're winning and they're not 1-5, whatever they are at this point. But I digress. That's his second pick there that he hit on. And then his last one, he had the Falcons -6 versus the Panthers, which of course they covered because it's the freaking Carolina Panthers, probably the worst team in the league, only behind the Patriots.
You know what they say? They get paid too. You know, that's the line. They get paid too.
Sure. He'll take the Panthers. You take your Browns. I'm gonna do my upsets, and I'm gonna stay in the basement where I belong. That's okay. You guys take the easy picks.
I got 2-4. I'm giving 6 points, and the Bengals are 2-4. It's not like I'm picking a great team.
Oh, stop it. You know the Bengals are better than their record is. Don't Bill Parcells me over there. That's why you lift all them weights. All right, that's what we're talking about here. All right, let's move on to Burgess's picks for this week. And, of course, being the homer that he is, he's taking the Patriots +5.5 against the Jacksonville Jaguars over in London this week. This actually – I want to talk about this for a minute because this is an interesting spread that they put out for this game, because obviously there was a lot of optimism. A lot of people are talking about Drake May and what he brings to the field there. The Jacksonville Jaguars – I don't want to say the similar to the Bengals, where I think they're better than their record is. I just think they've been very snake bitten, where I think they are a sneaky, okay team. Like, I'd put them in a decent tier, not bottom of the barrel where they happen to be right now. Trevor Lawrence has really, really impressed me this year because he is hitting guys on the dime with the throws he's making, and his receivers are dropping everything. I don't know if you caught any of that Jacksonville versus Chicago game last weekend that was early on in the morning. He had at least 4 easy touchdowns that were dropped by, I think it was Gabe Davis, Brian Thomas Jr., not Calvin Ridley, he's gone. There was another one there, but either way,
Christian Kirk, yeah.
Christian Kirk, thank you. They just, am I crazy, or is Jacksonville not as bad as they seem?
Well, look, last week defensively, they were awful. And, you know, we started off talking about Drake May. This will be the second straight week that the Jaguars play a rookie quarterback. And last week, Caleb Williams lit him up for 4 touchdowns. If you just look at their defense as a whole this season, there's only 2 teams that are averaging, giving up more yards per play than Jacksonville's defense. They're giving up 6 yards a play. There's only 2 teams in the NFL that have had more defensive penalties than the Jaguars have had. And they are, I think they've given up an NFL worst 14 pass touchdowns. So if there's an opportunity for Drake May, you know, just to circle back and tie it back into May, if there's an opportunity for him to do well, it's really against this Jaguar defense. I don't disagree with what you said about the way Trevor Lawrence is playing. And, you know, they got Evan Ingram back. It looks like Travis Etienne's not going to play. Tank Bigsby and De'Aaron Johnson are going to be their running backs. But I think the bigger matchup is Drake May and this Patriot offense against a really struggling Jacksonville defense. I think it's a great opportunity for May to continue his development, his growth. What I will also say is that this, even though the game is in London, this really has all the elements of a true home game for the Jaguars because they stayed in London all week. They're not going to be traveling. Whereas, you know, the Patriots are going to make that little 5-6 hour trip, you know, not the worst thing in the world. But so this isn't really a neutral site game. This is more of a Jacksonville get home game because they don't have to get on a plane and play on Sunday.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Obviously, the NFL is colluding with Jacksonville to let them win this game. I don't believe it. Anyway, no, that's Burgess's first pick. We're going to get back to the picks here. Obviously, he's taken Patriots +5.5. It'll be very interesting to see if they can either pull off the upset, as it's considered, or if they stay within the spread there. So, second pick that Burgess has, of course, he has the Commanders -8. And he specifically, I'm going to read it. He put in parentheses when he sent this pick to me, blowout incoming. And when we both chuckled, Benish, because before the recording, I was like, oh, who are the Washington Commanders possibly playing this week? Lo and behold, it's the freaking Carolina Panthers. Of course, a blowout's incoming. Jaden Daniels looks phenomenal. The Washington Commanders, they hung tough with the Ravens last week, who arguably could be one of the best teams in the AFC right now, could be one of the best teams in the NFL right now. The Commanders are playing the Panthers. Is he going to hit on this, Manish, or is he swinging and missing, which I really hope he does. I'd love to see a Carolina upset.
Well, look, so this is the margin. The Panthers are 1-5, right? So yeah. Here's the margin of defeat for each of those five losses that Carolina has. They lost by 37. They lost by 23. They lost by 10. They lost by 16 and 18. So they've gotten blown out essentially in 5 of the 6 games. So saying that a blowout is likely or an incoming, probably not going out on a limb just based on how the Panthers have played. They've gotten their butts kicked pretty much every week this season.
All right, fair enough, but I still hope you and Burgess are both wrong in that one. I don't want to see him go 3-0 again, but let's move on to his last and final pick here, and that is, of course, he's taking the Detroit Lions, very much to your chagrin, like you said, that they were going to go into Minnesota, and he's taking them +2.5. Now, we have a little bit of a different spread. I think you and I saw a plus, or was it would be +2, but we'll give him the points, or are we not going to give him that? What do you want?
I've seen +1.5. Maybe he's got some kind of like overseas bookie that's giving him 2.5 points. I don't really know. I mean, we could give him the 2.5 if you want to feel generous, but I haven't seen a 2.5 point spread. I mean, I'm going to have to actually reach out to him to find out where he got the 2.5 point spread because I'm going to bet on that. I found 1.5. You want to give him 2? We can give him 2. I mean, it's up to you. We can give him 2.
He's not here. I don't want to give him anything. I want to give him an L already just for taking the easy picks, like I said, he always does. So it's well, to be determined. When the graphic is dropped on Twitter, you guys will see what we decided to go with, whether we get in contact with him or not. I'm not giving him anything. He doesn't deserve it at this point. You guys went 3-0. I don't want to hear it because we're going to get to the basement dweller now. We're going to be getting to me and my crummy picks that I took last week. And of course, I took the Texans -7 versus the Patriots, which turned out to be very, very fruitful for me because the Texans absolutely blew the doors off the Patriots. Actually, I'm kind of proud of myself. In my Foxborough Frenzy show, I do a little score prediction at the end of the show there, and I gave my final score being the Texans 34 and the Patriots 20. And when it got to 34-21, I was sitting there, I texted my dad, I was like, hey, look at the score. Your kid knows a thing or two. And then, of course, the Texans had to score one extra touchdown to really rub it in my face, you bastards. But regardless, they helped me out. They gave me my pick right because I had a feeling they were going to run up and down on the Patriots the way they did. That was my one win of the week. My other picks here, Broncos +3 versus the Chargers. I thought the Broncos were going to keep the winning times rolling. They actually, that wasn't a bad game, Manish, because at the end, the Chargers scored 20 points in the first half. It was 20-0. Denver made a hell of a comeback in the fourth quarter there. They scored 16 unanswered points at the end. They just came up short where Harbaugh was able to clamp down a little bit on defense and put the clamps on Bo Nix there. So Denver is a sneaky team. You can't figure them out. They look like they're garbage one week, and then they shock you the next week where they beat Tampa and they do crazy things there. Bo Nix is an interesting cat to watch for. My final pick here, which I don't want to talk about, it was Jets. I took them +2.5. They should have freaking won that game. They missed 2 field goals. The doink twice. Freaking, it wasn't Nick Foles. What the heck was his name there? Zuerlein. Yeah, double. I don't want to call it double doink because that was obviously the infamous Chicago.
That's the Eagles. You're talking about the Eagles Bears. Yeah.
Well, yeah. But he doinked twice. He instead of double doink, he doinked twice is what we'll call it, where they could have won that game by three. They screwed me, screwed the Bills, screwed Davante Adams, screwed the Jets in general. I'm not taking them. So I'm going to roll with my picks this week that we're going to go with. And I'm hopefully not going to go 1-2. And I'm hopefully going to dig my way out of the basement here. My first pick, because I went with the Jets last week and they screwed me royally, I'm going with the Pittsburgh Steelers hosting those New York Jets on Sunday Night Football. I got the Steelers plus 2.5. Manish, am I crazy or is this a good pick?
You know what? Well, Russell Wilson looks like he's going to start, and that's I'm unclear how the offense is going to look. I mean, certainly their pass game will be better, but I actually think that against the Jets, Justin Fields would have been a better option just because the Jets have really struggled against athletic, mobile quarterbacks. And even though Pittsburgh's offense has looked disjointed with Justin Fields, he has made plays with his legs. And that might be what they need on Sunday night. Russell Wilson, who knows? I think Davante Adams, by the way, as I said earlier, I think he's going to hit the ground running. It wouldn't surprise me if he led the team in targets. So I don't think you're crazy. To answer your question, it's a primetime game in Pittsburgh. But if I were betting on that game, which I'm not going to because it's a little dicey, I would probably take the Jets side.
All right, well, you're wrong, Manish. I don't want to talk to you anymore about that. That's clearly the wrong answer there that I'm looking for. So give me the Steelers plus 2.5. That's my first pick that I'm going to hit on. My second pick, you guys all know I talked about the game already, was the Chiefs and the 49ers. I like the Chiefs to get the upset in this one. Give me Chiefs plus 1.5 against the 49ers, going to San Fran and doing what they got to do. And then for my final pick here, and I know you're going to like this one, Manish, because you're an Eagles guy. I'm going with your Philadelphia Eagles trotting into enemy territory there with the New York Giants. I'm taking the Eagles plus 3. Do we like this pick with the way that Jalen Hurts and Sirianni is yelling at fans and not getting Saquon going? Or how do you feel about this game?
I like the Giants with the 3. The Eagles, you know, barely survived a bad Browns team. And yeah, Nick Sirianni actually has been the talk of sports talk radio all week. You know, he got a haircut. I don't know why that's a big deal, but somehow that became a big deal that he got a buzz cut. You know, jawing at the home fans, that's a bold strategy, you know, like they say in dodgeball. We'll see if that works out for him. And, you know, bringing his kids to the post-game press conference, you know, I think there's a time and place for that. You can do that in training camp. You can do that, you know, after a training camp practice. I think it's like a much looser environment. But when things are tense after a regular season game, after you've just jawed with the fans, you know, I'm not sure that was the right venue to do that. I think he meant well. You know, I don't know Nick Sirianni personally. I think that, you know, just being in this environment, I know how much criticism he has gotten. You can't really win. Like, if he wins, it's because of Kellen Moore or Vic Fangio, because Sirianni's not calling plays, and if he loses, it's his fault. If the team loses, it's his fault. So he's kind of in a precarious position. I think his Q rating in Philadelphia is as low as it's ever been, and that's saying something for someone, you know, who has had a really good winning percentage over his career. Now, they haven't done well in the last calendar year, based off of the last half of last season, and you know, being 3-2 thus far. So, you know, I don't know. It's a rivalry game. It's in New York. Giants probably still kicking themselves for the way things unfolded against the Bengals the other night. I think it'll be a close game. If I were betting, I'd probably take the Giants side.
I love it. Well, Manish hates all my picks, so that's obviously a wonderful telltale sign for me. And the only thing I have to say about your...
No, dude, I look, like I said, I'm not going to be shocked if we a week from now we're talking about my 0-3 picks this week. Who knows?
I will be okay with that. Just all... I was going to say the only thing I had to mention about Nick Sirianni was as long as he doesn't wear a Santa Claus costume into Eagles Lincoln Park there. I mean, he's got nothing to worry about, right? That's
that joke is like 40 years old. It happened like in the late 70s.
I'm a historian guy. I like looking
up stuff. Come on, dude. If I have, you know how many times growing up I hear people saying, well, you know, they booed Santa Claus. It was one random guy at a game in the late 70s when the Eagles were awful. I mean, can we just move on? I mean, come on. What are we doing here?
Nope, we're not moving on, because I'm moving on as much as the snowplow and the Miami fans that when we lost or when we beat them 3-0. So right. I remember it. I'm like an elephant over here. I look like one and I got a memory of one. So we're all set on that. So, all right. At this point, my friend, we are going to wrap this sucker up. It has been a blast talking football with you as always. I certainly hope that my picks do better this week. I don't want to root against you, Manish, but at the same time, I need to get out of the basement. So I certainly hope you go the vaunted 3-0-3. I almost said 3-0. Here I am wishing you luck at the end here where I'm saying you're supposed to go 0-3 and you're going to go 3-0 on me. Anyway, to all of our fans out there, thank you so much for sticking with us and listening to us rant and rave and talk football at this point. We hope you guys enjoyed the show. As always, go Patriots for me, and we will see you all next time. Later.